All right, strap in, everyone. Today, we're taking a deep dive into a real legal head-scratcher. We're talking murder, but with a twist.
Oh, yeah, this one's a doozy.
It really makes you question some basic assumptions about the law. Like, can you be convicted of murder even if you never, you know, actually intended to kill anyone?
You're hitting on the core issue in Commonwealth v. Roebuck. It's a Pennsylvania Supreme Court case, by the way, and it's got everyone in the legal world talking.
And for good reason. This case really dives into the murky waters of accomplice liability, especially when it comes to third-degree murder.
Exactly. And that's where things get really interesting, legally speaking.
Okay, so before we get too deep into the weeds, can you give us a quick refresher on third-degree murder? I mean, I'm sure plenty of our listeners are familiar, but just a level set.
Sure, sure. So in a nutshell, it's murder where there's this element of malice, but no specific intent to kill.
So it's not like premeditated cold-blooded murder.
Yeah. Right. It's more like you do something reckless, something dangerous, and even though you didn't plan for someone to die, your actions were so out of line that the law sees it as malicious.
Okay, that makes sense. So how does Mr. Roebuck fit into all of this?
So Roebuck, he helped plan an ambush. And tragically, during this ambush, someone ended up getting shot and killed.
But Roebuck wasn't the shooter.
Correct. He wasn't the one who pulled the trigger.
So he's convicted at trial, right?
Right.
And the Superior Court upheld the conviction.
Yep. And then it landed in the Pennsylvania Supreme Court's lap.
And that's when things get really interesting, right? Because they weren't just deciding Roebuck's fate. They were using this case to clarify a huge point of law.
Absolutely. They were wrestling with this question. How do you reconcile accomplice liability, which usually hinges on intent, with third-degree murder, where intent to kill isn't the main ingredient?
So they were basically trying to figure out how to square that circle.
Exactly.
So what did they come up with? What was their solution?
Well, they landed on this idea, and it's pretty groundbreaking, that the key to nailing someone for accomplice liability in third-degree murder isn't about whether they specifically wanted the victim to die.
Okay, so what is it about then?
The court said it's about whether they shared the same, I'm going to use their words here, wickedness of disposition as the person who actually committed the murder.
Wickedness of disposition. Sounds like something out of, like, a Shakespeare play.
Right. It's a pretty dramatic way to put it. But basically, it boiled down to this. Did the accomplice show extreme recklessness?
Okay.
Did they act with this blatant disregard for human life? The court said that's the crucial factor.
So it's not just about checking off a list of actions, but about the overall attitude, the state of mind.
Exactly. And, you know, you can really see how this aligns with the Model Penal Code's approach, which focuses on the intent to participate in the crime itself, not necessarily the specific result.
It's like saying, okay, you may not have wanted someone to die, but you were messing with fire and you're responsible for the burn.
That's a great analogy. And it's a pretty significant shift in how we think about accomplice liability, isn't it?
It is. It's not just about what you intended to do, but about the level of risk you are willing to accept. So in Roebuck's case, the court saw his deep involvement in planning this ambush as a clear sign of that wickedness of disposition. Right.
They felt it showed a blatant disregard for human life, and that met their definition of malice.
And to add even more fuel to the fire, there was a concurring opinion from Justice Eakin that really threw another log on the legal flames, so to speak.
Oh, yeah. Justice Eakin, he didn't hold back. He basically said that third-degree murder shouldn't even be considered unintentional.
Wow. Okay. Strong words.
Right. He argued that anytime you commit an act that's malicious, death is always a possible outcome. So anyone who's willingly participating in that act is automatically accepting that risk.
So jump into a pool of malice. Be ready to get soaked in the consequences, intended or not.
You got it.
Okay, so with all these different perspectives flying around,
yeah,
how did the court finally clarify the law? Did they come up with some sort of test for figuring out accomplice liability in these really messy third-degree murder cases?
They did. They laid out a three-prong test.
Okay.
And it's, honestly, it's crucial for anyone practicing criminal law.
All right, so break it down for us. What's the test?
So prong one, did the accomplice act with that, you know, that wickedness of disposition we've been talking about, that blatant disregard for human life?
Okay, check. What's next?
Second prong, did they intentionally help the main person, you know, carry out the actions that led to the crime?
Got it. So malice, intent was the third piece of the puzzle.
Did their actions directly contribute to the victim's death?
So it's like a legal checklist. Malice, intent, and contribution. And if you check all three boxes, you're looking at a potential accomplice liability conviction.
Bingo.
And in Roebuck's case,
when they applied the test to his case, it was pretty clear he met all three prongs. You know, the planning, the assistance, and the connection to the victim's death. It all added up, and his conviction was upheld.
Man, this case is a real roller coaster. We started with this seemingly simple question, can you be guilty of murder without meaning to kill? And we've ended up in this maze of intent, malice, and legal interpretations.
And we've only just scratched the surface. We still need to unpack some of the bigger implications of this ruling, especially when you start thinking about things like gang violence and drug overdoses. And that's what we're going to dig into next.
All right, sounds like we've got a lot more to cover.
All right, so let's dive into some of those bigger implications. I mean, think about this. If proving malice is the new game in town for accomplice liability, what does that mean for the already complex world of gang violence?
Oh man, that's a whole other can of worms, right?
Exactly. You know, gang violence is already a legal minefield with all these different players and shifting alliances. Figuring out who's responsible for what can be a real nightmare.
Yeah, it's not always so clear-cut.
Right. And now imagine you're a prosecutor trying to build a case under this new understanding of accomplice liability. Suddenly, it's not just about proving who pulled the trigger. It's about showing who fostered that atmosphere of wickedness, you know, who encouraged the violence, even if they didn't directly participate in the act itself.
So you're saying that someone who's just a member of the gang, even if they weren't like the main aggressor, could still be on the hook for a serious charge like third degree murder?
Potentially, yeah. If you can show they contributed to that wickedness of disposition we talked about, maybe they helped plan the attack or supplied the weapons or even just egged the shooter on, all of that could be used to argue that they shared in the malice that led to the death.
Whoa. That's pretty intense. It seems like proving or disproving that malice element is going to be the linchpin in these cases.
Absolutely. Prosecutors are going to have to be a lot more strategic. They can't just rely on placing someone at the scene. They need to really build a case that shows the accomplice acted with this blatant disregard for human life, you know, that they were knowingly playing with fire.
And I imagine defense attorneys are going to have their work cut out for them, too. They'll need to dig into their client's state of mind, their level of knowledge, any mitigating factors that might, you know, cast doubt on that whole wickedness thing.
Right, exactly. Were they pressured into participating? Did they truly understand the risks involved? These are questions that could mean the difference between a murder conviction and a lesser charge, or even no charge at all.
Man, this Roebuck ruling really has some wide-reaching implications. You mentioned drug overdoses earlier. How could this ruling play out in those cases?
Well, think about it. We're already seeing this trend of holding drug dealers accountable for overdose deaths. But traditionally, prosecutors had to prove that the dealer, you know, knowingly sold a lethal dose.
Right, so there had to be intent.
Right. But now, with this new, broader definition of accomplice liability, could they argue that simply selling drugs, you know, knowing the risks involved is enough to establish malice?
Hold on. Are you saying that just selling drugs, period, even if you have no idea that someone might overdose, could now be considered third degree murder? Isn't that kind of a slippery slope?
It's definitely a point of contention. Some legal experts are really concerned about that. They think this ruling could lead to some overly harsh punishments for people who, at the end of the day, may not have intended to cause any harm.
Right. I mean, they might argue that the dealer wasn't acting with that wickedness of disposition. They were just engaging in, well, a risky business, sure, but not one that's inherently designed to kill people.
Exactly. And that's the debate, right? Where do we draw the line between personal responsibility and the law overstepping its bounds? It's a tough call. I think it'll be really interesting to see how the courts handle this in future cases.
This whole thing reminds me a bit of felony murder, you know, where you can be held responsible for a death that happens during a felony, even if you didn't directly cause it. Is this ruling kind of blurring the lines between accomplice liability and felony murder?
It's a great point, and it's definitely something legal scholars are debating right now. The court tried to distinguish the two by saying that accomplice liability still requires proof of malice, while felony murder often doesn't.
Okay, so there's still that key difference.
Right, but some critics argue that this distinction might not be enough to prevent the law from being applied too broadly.
So even if someone's involved in a felony where a death occurs, they wouldn't automatically be hit with a murder charge?
Not necessarily. The prosecution would still need to prove that they acted with that specific disregard for human life, that wickedness of disposition. You know, they'd have to show that it wasn't just a tragic accident.
So that three-pronged test we talked about earlier is even more important now, right?
Yes, exactly. It's going to be the legal yardstick for measuring malice in all these different scenarios.
This case really does make you think. We start out with a case about one guy, Roebuck, and his role in an ambush, and now we're talking about how this ruling could redefine how we think about accomplice liability in a whole range of criminal activity.
And that's what makes a landmark case so fascinating, right? It doesn't just settle the issue at hand, it sets a precedent that can have these ripple effects, forcing us to re-examine our assumptions and grapple with the complexities of the law.
Well said. So where do we go from here? What are some of the key takeaways from this case that you think our listeners should really consider? We've covered a lot of ground today, you know, Roebuck's role in the ambush, the potential implications for gang violence and drug cases. What really stands out to you as the biggest takeaway?
I think the most significant thing is how Roebuck shifts our focus. It goes from intent to conduct. It's like the court is saying, hey, we're not just going to look at what you hoped would happen. We're going to look at the actions you took. And if those actions, you know, demonstrated a reckless disregard for human life, well, you're going to be held accountable.
So it's less about trying to get inside the accomplice's head and more about looking at the cold, hard facts.
Precisely. It's like the court is saying, listen, ignorance isn't a good enough defense anymore. If you're playing a dangerous game, you got to be ready to face the music, even if those consequences, you know, even if they weren't part of your original plan.
This whole discussion really highlights how complicated the law can be, right? It's not always black and white, guilty or innocent. There are all these shades of gray that can really make a difference in how justice is served.
Absolutely. And Roebuck is like the poster child for that complexity. It forces us to ask some tough questions like, how do we define malice? Where's the line between holding someone accountable and, you know, making sure we're being fair? How do we make sure the law doesn't end up punishing people too harshly for actions that maybe, you know, had unintended consequences, even if those consequences were tragic?
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what's the one question that you'd like our listeners to really think about? Something that, you know, will stick with them even after the episode is over.
Here's one. In a world where what we do can have these huge, you know, and sometimes totally unpredictable consequences, how do we as a society find the right balance? How do we hold people responsible without creating a system where, you know, anyone involved in a risky situation automatically gets labeled a criminal?
It's a tough question, but a really important one, especially with cases like Roebuck challenging our understanding of, you know, of criminal liability. This case is a good reminder that the law is always changing, right? Adapting to new situations, always evolving.
And it really highlights the importance of staying informed, right? Engaging in thoughtful debate and always, you know, questioning those assumptions we have about justice and accountability. Roebuck may have settled the immediate legal issue, but it definitely started a conversation. A conversation that's going to continue for years to come.
Well said. It's been a fascinating deep dive, and I think we've given everyone plenty to think about. Thanks for joining us today.
My pleasure, as always. Until next time, folks, keep those legal minds sharp.
And that's a wrap. We'll catch you on our next deep dive.